This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Streets renewing their demand for a real democratic state free of foreign intervention. I've got the perfect guest to bring us up to date. His name is Ibrahim Khatabi. He is a Yemeni human rights activist and has worked for the Center for Constitutional Rights since 2008 as a legal worker for the Guantanamo Global Justice Initiative. Fluent in Arabic, he's traveled widely in the Middle East, and prior to joining the CCR, he interned with Human Rights Watch in their terrorism counterterrorism section. He was last on this show in May of 2012. Thank you for joining me, Ibrahim Khatabi.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
Really happy to have you again. Ibrahim, as I said in the introduction, this past week or so, the democracy movement in Yemen has hit international news again with massive demonstrations. At the same time, the current president, Abd al-Rab Mansour al-Hadi, I think if I said that name right, has announced the scheduling of the National Dialogue Conference, which is a formal governmental part of the transitional process to democracy, something that included the original election of Hadi, an election that was unusual in many ways in that there was only one candidate and you had only one choice. So, Ibrahim, bring us up to date on the democracy movement. What's been happening and how and why has it burst forth into the news again?
Well, a few days ago, there was the second anniversary of the Yemeni uprising, which took place on February 11th, 2011. That's when the uprising started in Yemen. Recently, what's going on in the country, actually, the political process somehow is jammed and there is nothing happening in the transitional process in Yemen. And the demands of the people hasn't been really met. None of the GCC initiative actually...
GCC is the... State what that is. They're the regional leaders.
The GCC initiative, it's... a political initiative that was designed by the Arab Gulf countries like Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and Oman, and Qatar, and with a packing of the international community, such as the mainly the Security Council. And so it is an initiative that gave the former regime and the former dictator, Ali Abdullah Saleh, an immunity in exchange for him to leave power and with his entire regime. And yet, nothing, I mean, he
they really have not left power, have they? I mean, he's not the president, but he still has a prominent public role.
He's still the head of the main political party in Yemen, the People's Party. And his son, the eldest son, is still the head of the Republican Guards in Yemen, which is the most powerful part of the army. And he still walked away with billions of dollars that he got immunity for.
And what about the demands for accountability for the violence and attacks against protesters and some of the actions of the past from his government? Have any of those been addressed?
Well, we haven't seen any real investigation and any real prosecution, even though the international community, including both resolutions by the UN Security Council, stated there needs to be an independent investigation into the crimes that were committed against the peaceful protesters in Yemen. Yet, none of that hasn't happened yet. So, as you know, when there is no accountability and justice, there will be no peace and development.
There's also been, during the same time, a real increase in intervention by the United States via drone attacks. I was shocked the number is 53 in 2012 alone. 53 drone attacks, that's way more than I had any sense of.
Yeah, this is a major issue right now in Yemen, and there is... a public outcry, a public cry about the drones attacks that are now not only taking parts of the south, but actually getting even near to the capital of Yemen, Sana'a. As you know, you could never solve any security issues by dropping bombs on people. So it's only damaging the political process in Yemen. The drones displacing people all across the country, creating more destabilized country, and damaging a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of parts of the country.
So you mean like taking out roads and bridges and other parts of the infrastructure that are essential, and which, by the way, much more is needed within Yemen. It's not that there's so much infrastructure to go around that.
That's exactly basic services like water, schools, and hospitals. And so people are moving out of their villages, and in essence, people are being killed. Yet the problem is, we don't know who they're killing. There is no names, no accounts of these individuals that they target in. There is no transparency, accountability, investigations to all the drone attacks. So the bottom line, we don't know who they're killing. We don't know what's going on in the country. And all we see just new drone attacks, bombing left and right. And that can cause serious problems, especially in tribal areas. Where, you know, if your family member got killed, the only thing you need to do is to revenge. And so...
To carry out revenge, you said?
Revenge, yes. And the country where it has a strong tribal society. And the thing is that the real issue here that U.S. might miss is that if they keep carrying these kind of attacks across the country... What will happen is that the tribes can side with extremist groups, and that means a total national security risks here, damaging to both the Yemeni people and the international community.
I looked at some videos of the current protests and anti-drone, anti-U.S., and also anti-Saudi. Can you talk about why they're so angry? They're combining the U.S. and Saudi in this, but there appears to be quite a prominence of demands around this to really just get out of our, you know, of our nation and respect our sovereignty.
Well, you know, there's some recent reports stating that some of the drone bases that were used to attack folks in Yemen were actually taking place from bases and Saudi Arabia. So that created more problems. But at the same time, Yemenis, the vast majority of Yemenis believe that Saudi is interfering in their political process, their personal lives, their you know, their businesses. And so Saudi being a real issue in Yemen, many Yemenis see Saudi as a country that is just trying to keep Yemen as weak as possible. Because, as you know, Yemen is the only democracy surrounded by, you know, kingships and families' rulings across the Arab countries, and like Saudi Arabia and Oman and UAE. So, you know, if any real progress made in Yemen, it will encourage people in the surrounding countries like Saudi Arabia to demand democracy. So when there is no real progress in Yemen in terms of justice, accountability, and a true democracy, it makes it an easier case for governments like the Saudi government to tell its people, look, if you want democracy, this is what you'll be getting, just like the democracy in Yemen. And if you want peace and jobs and you know, a decent life, then you need to stay under our ruling.
Well, you know, there's been this whole process put in place, this with the what's it called, the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC, including the Saudi Arabia and the nations you mentioned earlier, Oman and those, and the United States have really been pushing and backing this movement really hard, and they're claiming that this is a real next step for real democracy, and they've got scheduled what's called the National Dialogue Conference for March 18th, I believe it is. And this is one of the formal steps towards transition or in transition, supposedly. I do note that, I may say her name improperly, forgive me, but Tawakkal Karman, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, has said that she will boycott the National Dialogue Conference, and actually she will participate from the streets with other youth and protesters who want true democracy. Can you talk about this transition process and why it has people riled up as well?
I just want to begin by saying that you can never expect a backing for democracy from countries like Saudi Arabia that doesn't even give its women the right to drive cars.
Yes, you're right. So they're not going to be promoting real democracy anywhere because that would include women.
And that's actually expected by many Yemenis, know that Saudi will never back any real democracy or reform in Yemen.
So when the GCC pretends or says that it's backing democracy, most people just see that as political talk?
Yeah, but even going to the GCC initiative, some of the main parts of the GCC initiative was talking about, you know, the former regime led by dictator Ali Abdullah Saleh to step down. Then there's some main reforms that needs to take place, which none of them took place so far. One, passing a transitional justice law to the restructuring of the army. As you know, the army is divided since the revolution. It's part of the army, the first division that was led by Ali Mohsen, which is related to the former president as well, led part of the army to support the revolution. And also the other part of the army is led by the son of the former dictator. And that is still, they still divided, the army still divided, and so there is no unity. The army is supposed to be under a civilian command right now, yet none of that hasn't taken place. And you know, in Yemen, if the army is not united, that means you're going to have more issues across the country, more subgroups who wants to take over certain lands just because there is no order. So none of these, and before going even to the other thing is the transitional, what they call the national dialogue, it's supposed to include every group around the country. It's supposed to include everyone. It's supposed to give everyone,
a
say and the whole process. Yet, before going to that, there's supposed to be, like I said, the passing of the transitional justice law and also the restructuring and the army unity. None of that hasn't taken place. So you really cannot go to a dialogue when the army is still under the commanders of the former regime, when there is no justice law to actually investigate the crimes that were committed against the people and also find a way to deal with the outcomes.
So would we call this a sham conference? It's sham democracy? I looked at the election, and I look at many elections around the world and consider them shams. They're the appearance of democracy, but they're so constricted in who can ever get chosen to be on the ballot, or, you know, it varies from different countries, but there's many countries, I feel now, that have these sort of pretend democracies, going through processes, but not allowing any real power to the people that are participating.
That's very true, but I'm so glad to see that in Yemen there is a strong civil society, students and youth movements. So regardless of how they will design such initiatives, at the end of the day, people will be able to achieve their demands. So we still have that in the streets. We still have very strong civil society and youth groups. So I don't think any real justice and peace in Yemen will just be in hold for the longest. The other part of this is that, you know, President Hadi only have 1 year left until we have a real election in 2014. Yeah, there is still a lot to be done. We can't really tell at this point what will happen next, but for sure that the people will keep, you know, protesting until their demands are met. And even the national dialogue, it doesn't look right at this point, because some of the names that was already selected from women groups and youth groups were actually supposed to be part of independent groups like women and youth, yet it seems like many of the names that were selected are part of the parties that actually already you know, get in some individual.
They were already going to be allowed to be in anyway.
That's exactly correct. And so what it means is that the whole process is only between the political opposition and the former regime and not the people.
And so the people have been left out in the cold. I want to let my audience know this: you're listening to KBOO in A Deeper Look. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, and we're talking about Yemen today. And my guest is Yemeni activist Ibrahim Ghettabi. Let's go a little bit further. I want to talk a little bit more about the role of the United States and other regional forces in there. I saw a really bad editorial in a UK paper as well, which gave me the concern that some of the major nations in the world wouldn't be too unhappy to have Yemen, if it would rather have Yemen declared a failed state than have it actually become a real democracy. I that's just my opinion and a little bit of insight I'm getting from the way that the U.S. government operates in countries once they get them within their target. This many drone strikes are going to keep the nation unsettled, and with people fleeing, that means so many internally displaced. All of that is a huge burden on any nation, and it doesn't sound like the government there is doing much to help it. So let's talk about the United States and John Brennan, who played, became our new CIA director, has played a prominent role in Yemen. He spent a lot of time over there. Can you talk about the United States and its role right now and what you think it's going for there? If you want to, go ahead and bring in that shipment of arms that recently got interdicted, a strange affair there.
Well, clearly and obviously, the U.S. government only sees Yemen through the eyes of terrorism and counterterrorism. And this itself, it's a real issue and a real problem.
Do you think they really fear terrorism there? Or
I'm not.
That's a good question, isn't it?
That's a good question that Brennan himself needs to address. If they're saying that terrorism is in the increase, then there is some issue. That's some policy issue that needs to be re-looked at. It amazed me that during the whole Yemeni uprising, millions of Yemenis who took the streets never burned an American flag, never carried an anti-Western or anti-American flag. So even with that said, they didn't receive any support from a real support from the U.S. or even Western countries. And I'm talking about support for, the democracy and justice movement in Yemen. And that, raises a lot of serious questions. When you're still protecting the former regime, when you're still engaging them in the process, engaging them in a process that actually they damaged throughout their career, engaging them in the future of Yemen, it's a real issue for a lot of Yemenis.
From my seat, it looks a lot like that there actually was a U.S. strategy that formed up during the Arab Spring, and we can see it carried out in Egypt and carried out here because there's a similarity in that those old in power were allowed to stay. The military stayed. I mean, there was the appearance of a step down, but when you look at the military and you look at who's in power and you look at how things have gone, it was a revolution really arrested or stopped in process.
I think you have very good points. I believe that the revolution mainly in Yemen, got hijacked by the regional and some international powers. They didn't allow the democracy movements to move forward with their demands and allow them to achieve their demands. But at the end of the day, the people's will actually succeed. No matter how many blocks and how many bumpy stuff you put in their ways, they will achieve it. They were able to knock down regimes. So I'm sure at the end of the day, they will definitely reach their goals. It's a matter of support. If they want to support them now that would cause the international community, including the U.S., less energy, less money, and less problems.
So you feel that the democratic movement inside Yemen is strong enough inside itself that it's going to carry forward in the face of a lot of overt and covert opposition. I know that there are two movements going on. There are two struggles going on in the nation. One is with people called the Houthi in the north, and then there's also been a long-term secessionist movement in the south, because really the south was sort of added on. I mean, Yemen wasn't one nation all that long ago. And the United States, with all these drone attacks and then joining in with military attacks in different areas, we're always saying it's terrorists. But what role are these older struggles, you know, ongoing real struggles that have been there, what role are those playing, and how is the U.S. addressing those?
You know, just going back to the whole a strong movement in the country, civil society and the youth groups and other groups are very strong, yet they don't have the international support. They don't have a lot of resources comparing to the people they protesting against, who stole all the national resources, all the have all the money of the country, elite families. And so that's the real challenge for all these movements on the ground, but yet they have the will and the will to change the country and move it forward. Going back to the other two movements you talked about, the Houthi, which is a small group in the upper north of Yemen near the borderline of Saudi Arabia, and then the other southern movements, and mainly in the south part of the country. So the Houthis, for example, the government declared war against them 7 times in a row.
That's a lot of declarations.
And there's serious grievances there. The Houthis right now, their demands actually is going away from the demands of the people. Somehow they think, because they're part of a Zaydi Shi'i group, that and somehow they belong to the Prophet Muhammad's family, is that they have the right to take over the country. They have the right to maintain the power in the country just because they have that kind of roots. And that's becoming a serious problem. The groups also, including youth and the Yemeni government, believe that they are being backed by the Iranian regime.
Is not just something that the United States is saying to increase anti-Iranian sentiments. There is the real feeling on the ground there that they're being backed by Iranians?
I believe both. Uh-huh. There's a strong movement in Yemen because the problem is right now that a lot of groups are calling the Houthis to declare or to become a political party so they can clearly engage in the political process and the peaceful political process through peaceful means. Yet the group doesn't want to declare what kind of group they are. Clearly, they've taken over the state of Sada in the north, and they actually taken over other parts and the surrounding areas. So now they're capturing part of the land, and they rule in that part of the land. People trying to understand what kind of movement is that. Is a family movement? Is a one group movement? And they don't want to clearly declare what kind of group they are and what their actual demands are. So that's a serious problem there.
And that can present some issues of destabilization. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the CIA's hand in there somewhere. I mean, it did come out that one of the supposed airline bombers coming out trained in Yemen was actually a CIA agent from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. And going now to the Southern movement, it's a movement that started in 2007. As you know, Yemen was, since the 60s at least, was two Yemens, the south of Yemen and then the north of Yemen. But historically speaking, Yemen was never two Yemens. It was just a place that was taken by whoever has power or the most powerful. It consists of a lot of different tribal society and other civil societies. And so until the 60s, when the south part of Yemen was taken by the British Empire in the south, and then the north Yemen was controlled by some sort of a kingship. And so until the revolution started back in the 1960s in both parts of the country, and then both sides, the North and the South, declare their own states and their own independencies, and look to actually regain or reunite the whole entire country one day, which happened then later in 1990 when Yemen became became one Yemen.
So that southern movement now, what is happening with that
so
now?
I was just giving you a little bit of historical background. And so going to the 1990 is when the Yemen became the Republic of Yemen, containing both parts of the south and the north. And then around 1994, some group in the north, led by former dictator President Saleh and his family members and closest associates and allies, wanted to maintain power and to take basically the entire country for their own advantages. And so they declared a war against the leaders who joined them in the unity in 1990, and that actually allowed them then to take over the whole country. And then part of the South leaders were kicked out of the country. Some of them ran, and some of them stayed in the country, but their main posts were taken away from them. And then gradually what the regime in the North was doing is anyone from the South that is in a powerful or an important position was actually laid off. Lands in the South and a lot of natural resources were taken also away.
You know, we're running out of time. I have just a moment left. So it's out of this discord, though, that movement today is still going. So are some of the military attacks really not about Al-Qaeda, but about suppressing this movement?
Well, you know, any attacks that are happening in the country will only destabilize the country, will only weaken the democracy movement in Yemen. And so Yemenis keep wanting and demanding justice, accountability, want access to education, want to address all the grievances around the country, whether they in the south and in the north or elsewhere. And so I believe the international community should support the
real democratic movement, the movement of the people
exactly
in the
correct
streets. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ibrahim Ghatabi, Yemeni activist, also employed by the Center for Constitutional Rights. Thank you so much for joining us and bringing us up to date on Yemen. I urge all activists to keep your eyes there. The press, the mainstream press, doesn't give us much. And I will have you on again, Ibrahim, as things go forward. Thank you so much for joining
me
here on A Deeper Look.
Thanks for having me, Linda.
You're welcome.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. We're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints on today's show, an undocumented response to the State of the Union speech and an excerpt from a powerful speech by Pentagon Papers activist Daniel Ellsberg, who supports freeing military whistleblower Bradley Manning. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews George Saunders, author of the highly praised book 10th of December. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures presents more from a conversation with Joe Sacco and Chris Hedges, who talk about their book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. But first, at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And that's coming up next on KBOO.
This Valentine's Day, KBOO presents the Alfred Hitchcock movie, Rear Window, plus a pre-show performance by Portland's favorite late-night talk show host, Contessa de la Luna. That's Valentine's Day starting at 7 p.m. for Contessa de la Luna live on stage, followed by the film Rear Window. Doors open at 6:30 at the Clinton Street Theater, 26th and Southeast Clinton in Portland. Tickets are available now at Brown Paper Tickets. Seating is limited. 100% of ticket sales go to KBOO for this benefit spectacular. See events under the KBOO website for February 14th, Valentine's Day. See you there.
Good morning. Morning Cascadia. Today is Thursday, February 14th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, this morning, Republicans are threatening to filibuster Chuck Hagel's appointment as our next Secretary of Defense, actually Secretary of War. Chris Dorner, cooling the L.A. County coroner's morgue. Racism still boils beneath the surface of American society. And Lisa Graves, Executive Director at the Center for Media and Democracy and PR Watch, is with us to take a look at Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's peculiar and rather crude policy of kicking the poor when they're down. Now, first, this from the National Weather Service. Mostly cloudy today, highs around 51, calm winds. Tonight, overcast, areas of fog and a low around 40 for tomorrow. More fog to start things out with, overcast skies, which may gradually become sunny. Highs near 56. And Friday night, we could see a bit of rain returning, otherwise increasing clouds with a low around 42. The alternative forecast holding pretty much steady. From yesterday, the waxing crescent leaf moon in Pisces is 3 days old. And again, the advice across the board is leafy flowering plants, which means sprouting seeds on probably on the kitchen drain board or in a greenhouse. And that's it for both the alternative and the conventional report. Moving straight into the stories from around Cascadia, which we want to touch on first, before we go to speak with Lisa Graves, and also we're going to be speaking with Travis Ghosh on the tragedy of Chris Dorner, the policeman in Los Angeles who had in fact been persecuted, lost his job, and pointed the finger at racism. Of course, no one joined him in that not too surprising revelation, and we have the predictable results. It's more of a tragedy presented to the American public as another spectacle.